Welcome to the Run Nerd Library Podcast, a podcast for those who eat, sleep, breathe, train, think, talk, and read about running, and those who are curious. I'm the host, Don Hahn, a self-proclaimed run nerd. I consider myself more of a running enthusiast than an expert, fueled by coffee and blind optimism. This podcast will feature running experts talking about their books and enthusiasts like me who are here to discuss their books with them. Whether you're listening on your commute or on your run, we are happy to have you here. Welcome back to the Run Nerd Library Podcast. I am your host, Don Hahn, and with me today is author Tim Byers of the newly published book, The Order of the Red Lion. We're going to take a digression here from our normal path on this podcast where we talk about running-related titles. Since we're all well-rounded individuals with a wide range of interests, I thought maybe I'd take a look and dive into one of my other interests today, which is World War II history. As a World War II history buff over the years, I've read books in the fictional genre by W.E.B. Griffin. I've read some of the nonfiction works of the late, great Stephen Ambrose, including his notorious book, Band of Brothers. Watched many movies, including Saving Private Ryan, Midway, and going back to In Harm's Way, starring John Wayne. So it's always been one of my passions. It's been one of my levels of interest. And if I'm not reading something on running, there's a pretty good chance that I'll be reading something that's World War II related. So recently, I had an opportunity to meet the author that we'll be talking to today, Tim Byers. My wife and his wife actually worked together, and through them, we made the connection. I was excited to get a chance to talk to Tim when I heard that he had written a story that was World War II time frame, and I got a little bit of the background of the story. He forwarded a preview copy to me to take a look at. I read some of the story, and we decided to go ahead and have breakfast. And so we met for breakfast one morning, and it was really just kind of like, "Hey, this is cool. I want to chat with you a little bit and pick your brain." And that was on both sides of the table. And so at some point, you know, I said, "Hey, I think I'd like to work with you on this with my imprint, Run Nerd Press." And Tim was a little bit confused because he's like, "Hey, your imprint is Run Nerd Press and it's running related." And I said, "Yeah, you're right. But I do like to tell interesting stories, and I would love to be able to share your story through the imprint." So he and I got off to a pretty quick start there. And I've enjoyed working with him over these last several months as we've been working on this project, The Order of the Red Lion, which is coming out next week, actually. So, Tim, I'd like to welcome you to the Run Nerd Library Podcast today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Don. Glad to be with you.
It's great to have you here. So, as I like to do always when I talk to a new guest, is I'd like to learn a little bit about your background. So, kind of walk me through, how did you land on writing a novel specifically about these characters involved in the World War II era and in Luxembourg in Europe?
Yeah, sure. So kind of like you, I mean, and I think back, like, I've always been a fan of World War II history. For some reason, that era has always fascinated me. Maybe it's because it was so all-encompassing, you know, for a certain generation. I think something about the technology deployed during that era has some draw to it. And that's maybe part of the what drew me into it was mm-hmm. when I was a boy, you know, just making airplane models or tank models, or that was kind of my entry, and maybe watching old classics like Battle of the Bulge or Guns of Navarone. Some of those kind of adventure-y type movies and stories were really captivating to me. And so I think that's where, you know, the germ of some of these ideas came. I think I just had like an imaginative side that always, as I'm building these models, I'm imagining, you know, what they're doing. They're, mm-hmm. you know, flying through the air, they're attacking, they're in a dogfight, the soldiers are in their, you know, foxholes defending whatever. So I think just it always spurred my imagination. And that really is kind of where I got started in loving that period.
Yeah, and it's funny. I was walking through Hobby Lobby the other day through the models aisle, and I saw a Mustang model, and I thought of you immediately. Like that might have been something that you would have worked on.
I'm sure I did. I think I bought about everything I could back then, between
sure.
Allowance and grass cutting money.
Yeah. And so, and we'll get into in the next segment, we're going to talk about why Luxembourg and how you came to know enough about that area and that region and the history there to be able to tell this story. But we also like for our listeners to get kind of a perspective on you as an author. So what is it like for you as you sit down to write? What is your process? Do you have to light candles? Do you have a chair that you sit in? Are you a notepad kind of person, pounded on a typewriter? What's your story?
Yeah, that's so. I several years ago, probably more than a dozen years ago, I took a writing workshop down at Butler University, and the professor down there, he's still on staff down there. Dan Barden taught this summer writing workshop, and he taught some really principles that have kind of stayed with me like almost no other teacher I've ever had. And one of those was to strive to be able to write in any condition or in any circumstance. And so, in other words, he really went at sort of what is real common struggle for writers, I think, and that is all the reasons why I can't write right now. Like, I'm too busy at work, or the kids are busy with school and their stuff, or all the different things that we use to kind of block us from sitting down and actually doing the writing. And so sort of seeing it that way from a there are no excuses kind of perspective has led me to continue to just work at sitting down and doing the writing work. And what I've found is the best thing for me, at least at the beginning of the process, is to, you know, buy a nice spiral notebook. It doesn't even have to be that nice. It just has to be of a certain feel. A spiral notebook, get, you know, a favorite kind of pen, and then just start writing on, you know, pen and paper. Like, for me, the keyboard has to come later, because the keyboard makes this editing voice come out of my head, and that editing voice sometimes just grinds the whole process to a halt.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll find, like, you can find, you know, YouTube videos on what's called draft zero. So I like to call that draft zero, where I'm just writing the story, and the goal is just go, go, go until I feel like I have the story written. There might be some pausing for a little bit of outlining, and I like to have kind of a structure, and I really like to work on the outline of the story at some point, because these are thrillers and they have to have certain elements to them. But I really like to, you know, to get the most freedom, I really just write pen and paper. And I have I don't know if I even have a favorite spot, but I like to write on my back porch. I like to get on my bike and go to a park. I like to go to a coffee shop. I mean, I try to have as many different places as I can, but not to have any of them become like excuses, like, oh, I can't get to my favorite coffee shop today, so I'm not going to write. Like, that, you know, again, the kind of no excuses approach seems to work for me. And that also helps me have enough distance from it to be kind of work, versus it's all about me. And if somebody doesn't like this, they don't like me. It needs to have a certain professional aspect to it that says, I'm doing this work. I'm not being judged because people don't like this story, or they think the sentence is wrong, or whatever.
Yeah. And we could talk about that in just a little bit too, because I'm sure we've probably had a couple of conversations like that over the process. But you said something interesting, and I want to kind of pin down a little bit when you talk about your outline. So you like to work with an outline. Do you start with that from the onset, or do you have this idea, you start to flesh it out a little bit in the form of a passage, and then you say, okay, I see where this is going, I'm going to build my outline from there?
That's a really good question. I think I probably start at least with like a general understanding of where am I going to go in this story? Like, mm-hmm. what's the basic sort of thing here? Maybe that's officially called the premise or something. But then the premise you have to go somewhere for the premise to become an actual story.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for example, I could say a cool premise is, you know, a boy's father goes missing, which is kind of, you know, but that's not really a full story. That's not a story yet. That's kind of a situation, and a story mm-hmm. really has that character has to want things. It has to go somewhere. There has to be some big conflict and big destination. And so sometimes I'm thinking in terms of that premise, and then I have to work toward, okay, what's the story here? And then once I kind of have that, then I will sit down and start doing some free writing, because mm-hmm. another thing I've found, and this helps in the different barriers that you hit as a writer where you're kind of stuck, is that a lot of times you have to write it out to see the solutions come. And that's a difficult thing, to trust the process, if you will, to mm-hmm. bring your solution. And so I will go back and forth, like I'm currently quote unquote stuck with some plot points on my second book that I'd like to fix, or I'd like to improve. I have a fully written story, but I'd like to improve this story, and I get kind of stuck, and I think I'm hearing this voice say, I think you just need to sit down and start writing again and then see what solutions kind of present themselves. And mm-hmm. and that's sort of fun. So it's kind of like watching the TV show and wondering, like, what's going to happen next? But you're doing it through writing, and then you're like, oh, well, this could happen. That would mm-hmm. be a great idea. Let's try that and then see how that works.
So does that typically flow linearly for you then? Like, you, when you're working through your outline, do you try to work without gaps, or are you comfortable with, I'm going to write this section, oh, I've got a great idea, but that's probably not going to happen until further down in the story, but I'm going to go ahead and get it out on the paper now while I'm thinking about it.
I'm probably a little more linear, yeah. Although with kind of, you know, I've got several of these stories written and then kind of the finale in progress, and I had to jump and write some of the endings, but so I could feel like I kind of know what the ending might do. Mm-hmm. And then I'm coming back and filling in some of the parts that I knew I had to do, but I wanted to make sure I got like some of the good parts out first, not really good parts, but at least get some things down to make sure I don't lose them, mm-hmm. and then come back and flesh out some other parts for sure.
Well, I think that's a good transition point. Let's jump into the story. So when we come back in the next segment, we're going to talk about The Order of the Red Lion with Tim Byers. Okay, welcome back. We are here with author Tim Byers of the forthcoming publication, The Order of the Red Lion. Tim, in the last segment, you were kind of describing how you build the story, your process. Let's jump right into the story here in this segment. I think it's important to start out with why Luxembourg? And so I know there's a really interesting story that goes back to your college days. Can you give the listeners a little bit of insight as to how you chose that as location?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so I went to Miami University in Oxford, Ohio, and their study abroad program for juniors typically is a semester or a year, full year in Luxembourg. And so I was a business major, really didn't have room in my schedule for going to Europe for a semester, but wasn't, you know, passionately in love with business school either. So when I heard about studying abroad, I thought this is going to be awesome. And so I packed all that I could in so that I could take electives when I went to Luxembourg. So I go to Luxembourg. A lot of people don't know much about Luxembourg, including me. I could probably barely find it on a map, but only because I knew something about the Battle of the Bulge. Otherwise, you have to kind of work at it a little bit, right? And to be honest, for part of the draw for Miami students at that time was, hey, come to Luxembourg. It's at the heart of Europe. Go see Europe for a semester from this excellent base in Luxembourg. And so that's how a lot of us treated our time there was Friday afternoon, classes are over, got your backpack, you have your rail pass, you pop on the train, you go to Munich or Paris or Amsterdam or wherever. So I got to admit, I did that as well. But I was spending Monday through Friday in this really beautiful, charming, kind of medieval postcard country built on cliffs with a river and little village in the valley and these arched stone bridges. And Luxembourg is also a modern city. It's the capital of the European Union. And it's a super cool city, and it's built on these medieval forts called casemates, and they're full of tunnels, and they were used for 1,000 years, and they were used as air raid shelters during the wars. So all of that sort of in the background. One day when we're at, we go on this local field trip over to the U.S. Embassy. So it's Luxembourg City is the capital. It's got all the foreign embassies. We're going to go visit our, hometown American embassy. We go over there. We meet this lovely gentleman and his wife, John Delaboy, and his wife, Winnie. They're standing there waiting for us. They greet us at the official residence. It's super nice. We're like, wow, this is really cool.
Yeah.
Come to find out, we have a connection with Miami University. So John Delaboy, this ambassador, and this is in 1982, John Delaboy was born in Luxembourg, not far from where my story takes place or begins, where my major character is from. He grew up in Luxembourg. His mother died when he was young. His father moves him to Akron, Ohio. He grows up similar to the way I grew up, only a generation or two before. He's in Boy Scouts. He's trying to become American as he can. He learns English. He already knows French and German. He earns a scholarship through his hard work. He earns a scholarship to Miami University, pledges a fraternity. The war comes. He's part of the army. He tells them, I know these languages. They're like, great. Well, eventually that registers and they're like, hey, we can use you. Why don't you serve in military intelligence? And so John Delaboy is training people in languages and, spies, basically, I guess. Anyway, late of the war, they take him to Europe. The war ends. All the captured Nazis are taken to Luxembourg, somewhere in Western Europe. John Delaboy is sent as part of a team, and he ends up being on the interrogation team for these high-level Nazis, like Goering, the head of the Air Force, and really top of the top, the ones that they caught. So he serves the country very strongly for those Nuremberg trials. He comes back, goes to Miami University, thinks the way to peace is to bring people together. He works for Miami, he gets the school started, and then here we are, 40 years later, meeting him out front. And so his story is so inspirational that I'm not telling his story whatsoever, but he inspired me to write a story that hopefully kind of honors that spirit and those people.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And strikes me that it was happenstance that really was another part of that fuse that was lit in writing of this story, just that you happened to meet him in that situation, and he was also a Miami grad, and all those things kind of align. And it's always interesting when those underlying pieces of the story come together like that.
So I mean, you put that, it sort of lit the fuse for my, you know, to bring my World War II, my writing, and you know, this was like, this all kind of came together.
Yeah, and the story you mentioned, your protagonist, Hansi Broussard, he's a complicated teenager, isn't he?
Well, I hope so. Good. So Hansi is, he's typical 14-year-old, if I can imagine what a 14-year-old Luxembourger would have been like in 1939. But basically, he's a thoughtful person, I guess, kind of. Mm-hmm. He likes to hang out on the cliffs and look at the beautiful views over the valley. And rather than writing stories, he likes to sketch things in a sketchbook. And so, that's kind of his personality. He has interest in, you know, not thinking about the war. He knows the war is coming. His father is, as he learns pretty quickly, his father is very interested in the things that are happening around them in politics. And so Hansi really is called upon to, you know, face a challenge that he never anticipated. And, things start to move quickly in Luxembourg. There's a kind of a terrorist attack. His father is implicated. Hansi needs to figure stuff out. And the thing is, he's got to figure out himself along the way, because, you know, this is bigger than he thinks he can handle. Mm-hmm. And so he has to just sort of decide, I'm going to go try to find the truth no matter where it leads me. And, along the way, you know, he meets a friend. Her name's Karen. She's from Germany. That puts an immediate strain on their relationship. But they forge this friendship, I think, that hopefully is authentic and also, you know, helps him navigate not only his quest, but also navigate some of the things he's trying to figure out about himself. And, you know, so I really hope that as enjoyable as the adventure and the thrill of the adventure might be, that there's also kind of something that really resonates from Hansi's perspective of like trying to figure out, do I have what it takes in this crazy world that's swirling all around me? Am I going to be able to come through for the people I need to and the way I want to?
Yeah, he definitely undergoes a lot of growth through the story. And we're talking about a span of time. The story starts in August of 1939. As you mentioned, it's 1939. In the world around them, the German Blitzkrieg is starting. I believe Poland had either just been invaded or was on the cusp of being invaded at that point. And you're alluding to the rumblings that Luxembourg would be a target. As you know, over the previous centuries, that land of Europe was disputed and changed hands so frequently between the dynasties of the medieval periods and so forth. And there's this group who are definitely German sympathizers, right? There are a lot of people there in Luxembourg who have German descent. There are also people of Luxembourg who have French descent, those who consider themselves just to be Luxembourgish. So there's all these different pieces in play that almost are creating this powder keg, right? And you've got this 14-year-old boy navigating it. And we do see his growth through the story as he's trying to figure these things out for himself. Because like you noted, he wasn't really into the politics at first. So as you look at these things that are come together in this period where, you know, World War II, for all intents and purposes, is about to break out, and Hansi is handling all of these things that are being thrown at him, what do you think it is that makes him capable of going to that next adventure, that next piece of the puzzle? What was it that you wrote in him that made him be that strong?
Hopefully it's fairly basic, and that is that it's really about kind of his family and the integrity of his family and trying to, you know, really find the truth related to that. I don't think it's a spoiler to say, you know, his related to his father going missing, you know, he wants to find his father. And that's the pretty basic level quest that he has to go on. He's not like saying, gee, I'm 14. What will it take for me to become a man? That's like a side story, or that's not, none of us grow up that way, right? I mean, sometimes we do, but he's thrust with a very practical problem. And you know, as I continue to write him and other stories, that is so compelling to me to explore. For, you know, in World War II, children in particular were so vulnerable and such victims of the circumstances, and called upon to see and endure and do things that none of us have ever, we would never imagine to do. And so there is this aspect of having to grow up way, way, way too fast, or grow beyond what any of us would normally be called to. And so I try to touch on that, I guess, with a somewhat light touch, but certainly with a lot of respect for people who suffered and really lost their childhood, their childhoods through that. And that's really on both sides. I mean, I've read accounts of, you know, families, children and mothers, you know, growing up in Germany during the war, and, you know, the suffering that their own country brought upon them is no less real just because of the source. I mean, and having to endure this is just was incredible. So I don't know if I do, but I hope to tap into some of the, give folks some picture into what it would be like to be called upon to do something greater than you can imagine doing otherwise.
And the love, the loyalty, and that spirit of family that drove him forward in those points where, you know, it was very challenging for him to take the next step. So again, I won't dive in and give any spoilers, but he does face a lot of challenges throughout the story. And there are a number of other key characters. You've mentioned Karen. Any more backstory you want to give on Karen as far as the strong female character in the story? One of the strong female characters.
Yeah. Well, you know, this hints as to sort of my future plan, which I know is more of like in another segment, but you know, I wanted Karen to really stand as strong as she could beside Hansi. Because I have plans for her, I guess, put it that way. And, you know, so I just really enjoy writing about her character and also trying to give a perspective of, you know, she's kind of one of the people that I just spoke about. Like, she's a victim too. It's so easy. And I'm certainly not trying to do any kind of apologetics or anything here, but it's so easy for us to say, you know, German evil, you know, ally hero. And I'm certainly not really attacking any of those categories, but a girl like Karen, who, as her story evolves, you know, there's some truth about her. Like, they're victims, like the victims too. The house mother, or the woman that we lived with when I was a student in Luxembourg, she was of German origin. She grew up in Germany. She had to escape the Red Army coming to Berlin and raping and pillaging as they did. And she had a horrific escape from that horror. And so, again, I'm not writing her story in Karen, but the spirit of some of these people who endured, not of no choice of their own, you know. And so she grew up as a German girl, and you know, she was a victim of a sort too. So I'm trying to capture that spirit and just I guess, paint the picture with more color, I guess, to our sort of classic good versus evil all the time, the way we see World War II framed.
Yeah, and there are a number of characters who fit that description too within the book, who you're not quite sure where they stand. Are they good or are they evil? And some of them go one way, some of them go the other. And, you know, as far as helping Hansi along the way or being detrimental to the progress he's trying to make. So talk about some of the other characters that make this story so interesting and really keep the suspense ticking as you read through.
Sure. So I guess kind of around Hansi, you know, his mother and father, they're really key. Another important character in kind of Hansi's circle is his father's, the family friend's named Manolo. And Manolo is an Italian immigrant. Luxembourg has for a long time had Italian, Portuguese, different immigrant populations. And so Manolo is a important character that's an ally for Hansi, and part of his father's kind of circle of friends that are helpful. The local priest that is also Hansi's school teacher plays a prominent role as well. And, you know, I'm trying to sketch kind of the community that I would have imagined, you know, somebody in that age going through, you know, church and school and their communities kind of all kind of blend in into one another. From kind of on Karen's side, her mother and father are diplomats, you know, in the city. Her father has his circle of friends as well. And so these two worlds intermix and kind of Hansi and Karen together kind of have to navigate, you know, like how are they going to, who do they trust? How do they get through both of these types of groups? And then Hansi has his kind of circle of buddies that they can pal around together and go to the local fair and, you know, they go to school together and so forth. So hopefully there's a nice kind of rounded world that Hansi and Karen operate in.
Yeah, the characters are so important and integral to the story, obviously, but so is the location. So Hansi and Karen travel quite a bit through the countryside, you know, through they're in Luxembourg City, you know, they're in the Casemates. That's where they first meet, right? And folks, if you want to check out where they first meet, it's in chapter one of the book. And you can check out that sample chapter on the website. We'll give you more information about that, but that's where they meet. But they go on a lot of long distance adventures together. And I think going back to what you were saying earlier in this segment, with your own travels, your rail pass, you get familiar with the rail lines in Europe. The rail plays an important role in the story. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? I'm talking about the landscape of the story, where they are and what's going on at that time.
Yeah, first of all, I love trains. That was probably one of my favorite things to do when I was in Europe. And hopefully I don't bore the readers about it, all the times that they hop on a train and go somewhere. But it just, you know, such a key part of my experience there. But Luxembourg, again, a lot of people don't know much about Luxembourg, but Luxembourg has in its history was quite a powerhouse in the steel industry. And so not just from mining coal and different minerals, but steel plants. And so that features prominent. Hansi, you know, and Karen explore, one of their searches for clues leads them to steel country. There's also Luxembourg is right near the city of Trier, Germany. So there's a section where they need to go find something out over there. And Trier is a really cool little city on the Moselle River where there's some ancient Roman ruins. And it's a really cool destination as well. I don't explore it so much in this story, but the north of Luxembourg is the Ardennes Forest, which is most famous from a World War II perspective for the Battle of the Bulge. And so while that doesn't figure in this story, it will in the future. And so, you know, it's such a rich place to have, you know, these stories take place.
Yeah, and you do a great job in the story of creating the relevancy of the trains, and you know, starting with Hansi's father taking the train to work, and Hansi waiting at the train station for him to return from work, and that's really the precipice of the story. Like, things start happening in chain reaction from that point, and so it gets very exciting at that point. Is there anything, as we part with this segment, is there anything that you want readers to know about this story that this is kind of your chance to get it out there? Other things that are you think they're going to find interesting, or just who you think will find this story most interesting, your target audience?
Sure. So you and I have talked about this, Don, of course, kind of like who is the target audience. And you know, so classically speaking, protagonists at, you know, around 14, teenage of this type sort of puts us in the young adult category, which I think definitely makes sense because there are coming of age themes and issues that both of the characters have to face that are related to just growing up. And so I think there's an appeal there. Certainly it's written as a thriller slash adventure. So to me, the breadth goes beyond YA to, you know, thriller lovers and folks who like fast paced, page turning type. So I kind of wrote it as the sort of story I would have loved to have read when I was, you know, in junior high or high school, looking for interesting things to read, you know, so I really kind of write with that viewpoint, which I hope, you know, is appealing to people of kind of all ages. But I would say that's it. I have had people ask, like, in terms of like the youth, you know, like a young reader, in terms of the level of violence and that sort of a thing. And I would say I would call it kind of PG, PG-13. Obviously it's war themes, and so and this is the beginning of the war, so if you can sort of think ahead, you know, the way I describe it is hopefully it's not gratuitous. I'm trying not to glamorize the violence, and hopefully I haven't, but as it is going to be a series about war, you know, this is the beginning, if you will. So anybody who's concerned about that, I think, you know, certainly you can read it with your child, and you can interact on the themes and, you know, talk about like that period of history and what was going on and what children would have had to face during that time. And hopefully it would spur good conversation.
I think it should. I think you're spot on with the audience that'll be interested in it. As a World War II history buff myself, I was fascinated by the story, as, you know, starts to make some connections of things that I may have read at a more terse level as I'm reading through kind of history. And this is a story that brings it all together. The historical fiction aspect of it softens those edges that you were kind of talking about, the edges of war that are bloody and sharp. It really gives... Well, it's been great catching up about this title. When we come back in the next segment, I want to find out what you have planned and what's coming up next for you. All right, we're back for our final segment here with Tim Byers. He is the author of The Order of the Red Lion, a Run Nerd Press publication. So, Tim, you've spent a lot of time working on this novel, especially over the last 6 months. We've been working at it to get it fine-tuned to where we're ready to come to print with it. It'll be available as a paperback. It'll be available as an ebook through pretty much any platform, whether you're a Kindle, a Nook, We'll have it on Vital Source. Wherever your platform is, you'll be able to get the ebook if that's your preference. So what's coming up next for you? What's after this publication comes out? What's up next for Tim?
Yeah, great. Thanks for the question. So, you know, as I said, this is kind of the beginning story for Hansi and Karen, really. And and it's 1939. So the war really starts in this book and with the invasion of Poland. And it really takes another six, seven months before war comes to the West. So mm-hmm. my second book in this series jumps to that point when the war actually comes to the Grand Duchy and has an adventure and a story that kind of takes Hansi to the next step in kind of his own growth and in what's going on. At the same time, going back to the idea of Karen being a strong character, somewhere I got the idea of what happens to her. Mm-hmm. So I have another book written that's pretty much about Karen and what happens to her as a result of these events and what happens next. And then beyond that, I have kind of, you know, so and these happen at different stages during the war. So Karen's story is a couple years after this. And then, you know, I'm about three-fourths through I guess I'd call it the finale or something, but mm-hmm. Basically a story that tries to wrap things up and kind of with the conclusion of the war itself, like what happens to these people. So that's kind of where my plan is right now.
So people can follow the rest of the lives of Hansi and Karen as they go through the war and some of the other, maybe some of the war atrocities that you were kind of referring to earlier, like more likely to occur in the next parts of the series.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And so you'll be out and about in the community. You have some things coming up as far as being out there and doing some book signings and some events. Anything specific you want to shout out to the listeners?
Yeah. Obviously, the full launch is coming up here on the 10th. And then on the 12th, which is the Saturday, August 12th, I'm actually going to Wisconsin for a Lux Fest. So most people, again, don't realize there's, I think, more Luxembourgers in the United States than there are in Luxembourg itself. And Wisconsin is a high concentration of them. So I'm going to go to a fair up there and meet a bunch of folks there and maybe some Miami grads too. And then really the big plan, I've got another event in September, a couple events in September, but in October, we're actually going to Luxembourg for a 55th anniversary of the Miami European Center in Luxembourg. And I'm going to, you know, introduce the book to Luxembourg itself, meet some old friends, hopefully make some new connections, show my wife all the places that I wrote about. And so I'm really excited about that.
That sounds like a lot of fun. And you'll have to share some photos with us along the way. And folks, if you want to get wind of where Tim's going to be for the book signings and the local events, you can definitely check out our website. It's www.runnerdlibrary.com/redlion. www.runnerdlibrary.com/redlion. And we will be putting Tim's schedule up there, as well as that free sample chapter that I mentioned earlier. And if folks wanted to follow you on social media, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah, so you can look for me on Facebook, Tim Byers, Twitter at tbyers31. And then my website is tim-byers.com.
Great. Folks, we hope that you found this fascinating. Pick up a copy of the book, either in print or digitally once it becomes available. And get yourself immersed in the story of Hansi and Karen, and there's going to be more stories to come. Tim, thanks for joining us on the show today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Don. This has really been fun, so appreciate it.